Hello and welcome to this week's Trad Tasman Talk. It is 6 p.m. here in lockdown Melbourne. I'm Tim Williams, Editor-in-Chief of The Unshackled.
And it is 8 p.m. here in lockdown Auckland, and I am Dewa De Boer, the editor of Right Minds NZ, and a little bit tired of my tinfoil mask. good to see everyone here. Masks still just recommended, not compulsory yet. So
isn't the official line strongly encouraged or highly recommended?
Yeah, highly recommended is the official line, but not mandatory. So there we go. We're all good. But if you do want them, you can buy them. They're only about $60 each. I make them myself. Just let me know if you want one.
Well, I must say, welcome back to the lockdown club.
It is. We left you in lockdown a couple of weeks ago when I decided to take some time for campaigning. But now it appears that my campaigning has stalled. So here we are back on the show. It remains to be seen whether the campaigning will resume in a couple of weeks or whether the election will be held. None of those questions were actually answered today. So,
But you did get, as you predicted, because we had you on the Uncuckables last night to give an on-the-ground report from Auckland, because you're only plunged into this. You're at alert level 3 lockdown. That was due to end midnight tonight, but as you said, you weren't confident of that.
No, I wasn't. I was actually expecting us to basically go into level 4, but we have just had an extension of level 3 for 12 days, which would put us at a two-week cycle, which I was expecting at a minimum anyway, is two to 4 weeks is usually what you would expect, because the virus, Chinese virus has a sort of a 14-day incubation cycle, which means that when you get through to the 14 days, you get one full cycle in lockdown. If you do another 2 weeks, you get, two whole cycles, and you basically know whether it's under control or not. At least that's what they did last time. So I'm expecting something similar.
So they have said, because I've started to watch the press conferences in Australian Sky News, they have a dedicated COVID-19 channel where you can watch on an endless loop all the press conference from our state leaders, the medical officers, Prime Minister, and now Jacinta Ardern, and is he Chief Health or Chief Medical Officer?
Chief Health Officer, I believe, yes.
Dr. Yeah. Ashley Bloomfield, we'll probably be seeing him a bit more on Australian screens. We've come to know, our Victorian Chief Health Officer, Dr. Brett Sutton, quite well. The former federal Chief Medical Officer, Professor Brendan Murphy, he's now the Department of Health Secretary. So we've got the acting Chief Medical Officer now, Professor Paul Kelly. What can you tell us about Dr. Bloomfield?
Well, he was unknown until all of this started many months ago now. But he shows up on almost every briefing that we have during active clusters. He handles the media quite well. He's very, very popular, and he communicates very, very well. But his decisions are always in line with, so his public health recommendations always seem to be in line with where public opinion is. So, and often in line with where cabinet wants to go. He at least, and maybe, for good or for ill, his advice always aligns with where it should,
And
or where it's expected to be. Very, he never drops anything unexpected.
Yeah. And the attitude of ordinary New Zealanders so far, and the mainstream media, is we've all got to get tested immediately. This is the right thing to do, and all these conspiracy theorists are going to be out again.
Yes, the big focus on conspiracy theorists with the media recently. But before we crack into some of that, I've just seen a comment here. Oregon has said he's cracked open his port. I've got my gin out tonight. I think for most New Zealanders, this is probably the third night in the row that we've been drinking just while we're absorbing the news. And in this show, We're planning to sort of segment things up a little bit more, so we're doing our usual introductions now, and then going into a couple of the smaller topics and keeping an eye on the chat, of course, if you have super chats. We'll spend the most main part of the show, as usual, on a big topic, which in this this case is incredibly obvious what we'll be talking about. But I want to dedicate the last sort of 15 minutes of the show to sort of a Q&A. So we'll go through more than just super chats. If you've got questions, just ask them. If you've got things you briefly want us to cover in our overview, send them to us at the beginning. Just comment on, here's something that's happened that you want an answer to, but especially in the last 15 minutes. So we'll try and make the show a little bit more interactive from here on out as well, rather than us just talking about the same things all the time. So thank you to everyone who's come on the show as well. And good to see so many people in the chat. And obviously, super chats. I believe Tim would interject that here. If you do want to leave a super chat, go on the Unshackled channel, and that's got the super chats activated, and you can leave a comment there that Tim will read out.
And if you want to be able to send through super chats to the Right Minds channel, it needs another 419 subscribers. So, well,
subscribe.
Right Minds is going to be, for the time being, one of the few sheeple outlets. I know that sort of it sounds like a double reference in New Zealand when say sheeple, but it's a common expression now. The mainstream media they're full on behind the lockdown, and as I mentioned, apparently the queues have been hours and hours and to get tested. Yep. Even though if you test positive, you get a mandatory 14-day holiday.
Yeah, in a special government facility. There seems to have been a little bit more clarity around that today, where it's hard to tell if it is mandatory, because I heard them say today that you will be asked to go. And I'm not sure if asked to go means voluntary or not. But they one of the concerns was they would be ripping people from their families. But it seems that they will ask you and your whole family, the whole household, to go into their special care units, where you will be looked after for 14 days. And the testing, and they're turning away people from testing as well. So the queues are so long, they can't process all of the tests who everybody wants to go and get tested, that they're actually turning people away. And they keep saying, if you don't have symptoms, if you haven't rung ahead and asked if you should be going for a test, then don't come for a test. So they're actually turning people away from tests at the moment still. And they're only testing people who are symptomatic.
Which is the approach that Australia took at the beginning, but now pretty much anybody, at least in Victoria, can get a COVID test.
That's because
test.
You're all sick anyway, so.
We're
not there yet.
new daily cases went up today, not significantly, but it was 278 on Thursday, which is the lowest it's been in almost a month. There are only 8 deaths today. It went back up to 372. There were 14 deaths, but it's not the dramatic jumps where we had 300 one day, then 700 the next. And our chief health officer, Dr. Brett Sutton, said, I do believe that we're through the worst, but he did say when we were at stage 3 that before we went into stage 4, our modelling did say that this day would be the peak day, which, of course, we've learned not to trust the models.
Oh, absolutely. And on the subject of mandatory quarantine as well, it was interesting that Ashley Bloomfield was on the Mike Hosking show on Newstalk ZB. And for the Australians, Mike Hosking is kind of known as the sort of the National Party centre-right radio guy, and he asked Bloomfield, he says, will you be doing mandatory quarantine? And Ashley said, we rounding up is what we do to sheep. We won't be doing that to people. And then 6 hours later, the government announced that they would be putting people into quarantine. So you can connect the sheeple, you can connect the dots there.
And so it was announced late on Tuesday evening that there was a 4 new, well, they term them mystery cases.
Mystery cases, yeah,
because
that's
right. You'd been 102 days without community transmission. Pissy Lex Peter said in the Unshackled YouTube chat, you guys in NZ were doing so well, now this. Well, I did, I think I've said this to you both on air and off air, that elimination, it only works if the borders are closed, fully closed, secure for forever. And I knew that Melbourne wouldn't be the first to have this second wave. And, well, your lives in Auckland, at least, have been turned upside down this week.
Hey, absolutely. That definitely has been the case. I may as well give the case numbers updates here. We had 13 new cases today. We're up to a total of 49 cases, but 22 of those were in sort of border control quarantine, so in managed isolation. They've just, so that puts us up to, I have to do some quick maths on air here, we're up to about 30-something cases from this cluster. This was beyond the point where the entire country was put into level 4 lockdown before. And the justification for not doing so now is not it would be a bad idea, but the justification is they're all linked to a single cluster. So say we've all linked them to the same group of people, with the exception of one case yet that they believe is linked. But they have not traced it back to patient zero. They're not 100% sure they've got the original patient. And they trace that one back to 2 weeks ago, or just over 2 weeks ago, I believe the 30th or... check it on my calendar here. They said the 30th or 31st of July. And that case may not have been the first case. And they have, and he was a worker in the sort of a freezer, a meat packing freezer place, which have suspected that, it's come from overseas via the frozen chicken.
Yes.
And that's still a story they're holding to. They're still saying officially that they have not identified a breach in the border quarantine system. They're still sticking to that story to say, no, we have no evidence this came through quarantine. And because they finished the DNA reconstruction,
genomic sequencing.
The genomic sequencing doesn't have any DNA, it wasn't part of the previous strain that we had in New Zealand. So it's not been something that's been lingering around. It most definitely has come from somewhere. But they claim that it's currently 100% unknown as to where it came from. It was a sort of spontaneous generation from the freezer.
So patient zero could be a dead frozen chicken, which China has actually claimed that chicken wings imported from Brazil tested positive for COVID-19. A sample of frozen chicken wings imported from Brazil has tested positive for novel coronavirus in the southern city of Shenzhen, the latest in a series of reports contaminated imported food products. Maybe it didn't originate from bats, the coronavirus. It came from chickens.
And it's we have had another Chinese doctor escape just today. I saw it was actually on the mainstream media saying that they had another Chinese doctor who was saying that they cooked it up in a lab. So the lab story, the lab conspiracy, at least that's what they used to call it, is still alive and well, and still looking more like a sort of a conspiracy fact. At least things keep pointing back to the lab over and over again.
Now, of course, the big question is what's going to happen with the election on September 19th. I know that the opposition leader, new opposition leader, yep, Judith Collins, has called for it to be delayed. And her official reason is so that it can be a free and fair election. Both sides get to equally campaign. The reason you're able to do this show tonight is because campaigning has ended. But I can't help but suspect maybe Judith Collins, she wants the election delayed so that Jacinta's elimination triumph can unravel in the coming weeks.
And that is exactly what I would suggest as well. The longer we wait, the more things unravel for Jacinda. Possibly the lower her support will drop. It's unlikely she'll get a boost at this stage. So where do you go from here? Unless she can re-eliminate COVID-19, if she can re-eliminate the Wu flu, and then claim, oh, yes, I've done it again. But you know, at some point, her government has to take responsibility that you know they're the ones who stuffed up. They're the ones who have taken us down the wrong path, or have decided to go for what currently we can still say is an impossible task, which is eradication and permanent eradication. And so yes, she wants the election right now. Even the Deputy Prime Minister Winston Peters wants it delayed, but. In the end, the Prime Minister gets to determine the election date, and there are legal requirements to have it as well before December, essentially. So, at some point, the election has to go ahead, and it's going to be interesting as to in whose favor that will be. My personal view is just we should have the election sooner rather than later.
I'd agree with that as well.
Yes, it's basically a wartime election where, all the cards are stacked in her favor, but it's much better to have the election within the constitutional arrangements than to now start saying, oh, we're going to pass more legislation to delay an election. That's definitely not something I'm very keen on. Obviously, she can delay it for a month or two, which is what Judith Collins is pushing for, and that would be fine. They have generated so much uncertainty with the rolling lockdowns. There's no guarantee that we don't have wave three in November. And what are you going to do then? You end up in the same situation over and over again. So,
well, we've described the queues to get tested, and of course, as Donald Trump famously said, if you test more people, you're going to find more cases. And well. There is already one person in hospital, I heard Ashley Bloomfield say, which is how our second wave started. There were the clusters, and I'll just show you Australia's current coronavirus curve, which keep in mind, most of this is from Victoria. You can see this was the first wave here back in late March, early April, then down throughout May and June, and then you can see it slowly went up, and then pretty much dwarfed the first wave there. It's stabilized a bit here.
And this sort of V-shaped case, I should have grabbed the charts for these before the show, and I haven't got them, so maybe next week I can demonstrate. But this has happened to almost every country that's done a lockdown. I'm trying to demonstrate it with my hands here in front of the camera, but they would go up, and then if you look at if you were to chart,
careful with your hand signals.
And I do need to be very careful with what I'm doing with my hands. And then they would drop again, and then after they lifted their lockdowns, they would go back up to where they would have been tracking if they had never done a lockdown. So there you go, my dangerous hand signals. I hope they went okay there. But the end result is the same as if they had never locked down. The end result is Sweden. That seems to happen when you model them together. The end result is no matter what the flu burns itself out. Respiratory virus goes through and does whatever it does. That even the health professionals don't fully understand, but it simply goes up to a certain amount and then drops off out. And essentially, you are achieving some kind of herd immunity, even if you're only looking at 10-20% or less of the population. But possibly because easily 80-90% of the cases are so mild that people not going to get tested, not testing positive. So that appears to be the case in all of the places that have had the so-called second wave is simply the first wave completing itself after it was interrupted by a lockdown.
Yeah, that's why I've sort of referred to the first wave that Australia and New Zealand had back in late March as sort of a phony wave, because it was mainly return travellers. There was hardly any community transmission, where with our second wave or genuine first wave, there is so much community transmission going on, which is why the contact tracers have actually had a huge task on their hands. And there's been heaps of stories in Victoria about close contacts, so it took days for the contact tracers to get into contact with them. So there was, as I said, the first wave was sort of a phony wave. There was not much contact tracing to do, but this is the actual challenge to.
And they keep saying back then and still now, we have the gold standard contact tracing. We can trace so many people per day, and even still now, they're struggling. They're even struggling to communicate correctly. Where the cases are. We had this happen today. They had the press conference. Chris Hipkins, who is the new health minister, as everybody will remember, our previous health minister did not survive the previous lockdown. Mm-hmm. And I mean, politically rather than physically.
Yeah, well, he didn't survive did quite it physically
well.
Either.
He did quite well physically, looking after himself. But he certainly did not survive in any political measure. So the new health minister came up on stage today and he said...
Yeah, I've got the footage here.
Yeah, and you play the clip, just a couple of seconds of it is all we need.
Yeah.
Well, this is one of the challenges that we have across the country at the moment. People are at a heightened level of anxiety. That's understandable. There is one source of truth, though, when it comes to these things, and that's the announcements we make here. And one of the reasons that we are not drip-feeding information out, we are doing it in a consolidated and coordinated way, is because we don't want to spend our time, chasing down and reconciling information. We'll do that properly, and then when we make the announcements, we'll make sure that the information is all verifiable and fact-based.
And that's probably enough of the clip.
One source of truth. The old trust us, we're the government.
Yeah. And this is the same line that Jacinda rolled out last time. He went and rolled it out again this time. And then we cut off that clip there, but Ashley Bloomfield announces, there's a case at all of these colleges, including Pakuranga College. And then he carries on and there's some questions about it. And the obviously the principal of Pakuranga College went on social media and said, hey, what's the case at Pakuranga College? I haven't heard of this case. We've never been told about this case. They said, I'm sure they were notified, but no, it was a mistake in the notes. So they had to go and retract this and say, no, there are no cases in Pakuranga College. We accidentally released tomorrow's news. It was just a genuine mistake that they made, misspoke. And then they also made statements during that press conference after being asked by journalists about a ramen shop in Wellington that said that it had a COVID patient that had come there and eaten ramen and then flown off, like sort of during the middle of his supposed lockdown stay. And again, they said, we spent hours chasing this up yesterday. All of these rumors are false. There's none of this. None of this has happened. You've got to stick with us, the one source of truth. And then again, 3 hours later, they retracted that because there was indeed someone who traveled through Wellington and then went on to Japan, or was it Singapore and Japan, where they tested, a Japanese man, and he tested positive in Singapore. I'm not your one source of truth, so I'm pretty sure that's, he tested positive and then... They denied it at the press conference where they were claiming to be the one source of truth. So we're off to a very, very good start with that.
There'll be plenty more of that to come. And you can imagine behind the scenes, there's probably lots of frantic politicians and bureaucrats, probably lots of swearing and yelling as well behind the scenes as well. All press conferences with politicians and bureaucrats are highly coordinated.
That's right. And there was that moment where some of these questions were asked, and it was kind of we didn't rehearse this. And that's where they sort of tripped over themselves at that point. So the media are getting a little bit more aggressive in that sense. And that was unexpected when they had previously had such a cordial relationship. And part of that might be the media probably won't survive this lockdown if we go into another level, you know, full scale nationwide level three, or even an Auckland level four, that, you know, that could kill off the media. And even a level three is costing us a lot of money. I think 3 days or a week was half a point of GDP, you know, of the year's output we lose in a week, just from Auckland. So that is definitely not good for them and for us. And obviously the Reserve Bank followed up all of the bad news yesterday by saying they're printing another $40 billion. So the quantitative easing program is being
liquidity
extended.
Liquidity. Josh Frydenberg, our treasurer, called it.
More fire, more fuel for the fire, which basically amounts to about $22,000 per household. So, but obviously that's not going to the households. That gets poured in down the endless drain of, you know, creating more debt for people, or handing, you know, financing the wage subsidy program, which is also, again, being extended to make sure to push it well beyond the election as well. So people won't run out of their money. And, you know, a huge, huge proportion, the vast majority of Auckland businesses are on that wage subsidy.
The media not surviving the second wave. Oh no, that would be so bad.
Oh, yeah.
We had in Australia, Network 10 have their second wave of cuts. Back in May, they shut down their 10 daily news and lifestyle website. This week, they've cut their news and current affairs again. Sadly, they didn't cut the project, though. They cut staff at their Studio 10 program, including Kerri-Anne Kenley, who's probably one of the most based Australian media personalities. All of their news bulletins will now come out of Sydney and Melbourne. So the 10 news bulletins in Perth, Adelaide and Brisbane won't be broadcast locally.
Yeah. What a shame. What a terrible shame. No. At least I'm certainly not going to cry over. You know, these are the people who got us into this mess, and they're the ones who continue to you know, put through the propaganda, and they, you know, they feed the conspiracies that they then try to smash. They're the ones that are creating that wonderful environment where you know, everybody wants to be you know, in the lockdown. And that's still the case, still surprisingly high ratings for the lockdown. Although if you talk to people on the streets you know, all the people that I've come across, which is a decreasing number of people that you come into contact with over the days, but you're picking stuff up at a shop, and you know, people are not happy, especially business owners. They know that, you know, they're on a final lifeline where their entire life's work could be destroyed. You know, by this narrative that's been pushed by the media that they've exported from, you know, communist China. So they've got the CCP, you know, the CCP virus in both the physical sense, but also in the mental sense, where they've, you know, this is the mentality that they've exported, and that we are, you know, that's being applied to New Zealand again, the second time, and indefinitely. They're committing to rolling lockdowns indefinitely until there's just nothing left.
And this is why I told you last week that our media basically flipped on Dan Andrews and finally started scrutinizing his government, especially over the hotel quarantine breaches and whether ADF assistance was turned down. He still maintains that was never an offer, even though Federal Defence Minister Linda Reynolds has put out a statement saying yes, the ADF were on standby, ready if needed. So there's been this back and forth this week, and that's basically the media flip, because more people have been impacted by the stage four restrictions, especially with the week of limbo in the first week, when a lot of people didn't know if they were permitted. A worker or workplace are entitled to childcare. There was mass confusion, incorrect bureaucratic advice made it worse. And so that's when the media just basically they stopped hounding the so-called conspiracy theorists, the virus deniers, and the anti-maskers, and they're now telling the stories of the people affected by loneliness, mental health. They've even reported on a few tragic suicides as well because of the lockdowns. And we had break in our Age newspaper today, which is owned by the Nine Network. They because there's obviously Daniel Andrews, he hasn't answered many questions about the hotel quarantine breaches. He palmed it off to this independent judicial inquiry. He's basically said, I don't know the answers. The independent judicial inquiry, which was delayed because of stage four, but it finally starts again next week. Former Judge Jennifer Cote is the chair of it. But the Age broke today that the apparent patient zero was a hotel night duty manager at the Ridges on Swansea Street. This led to the infection of five of the seven security guards on patrol that evening, and a lot of them went and gave it to their families in the Northwest. We've heard obviously a lot of salacious things about the breaches in the Melbourne's hotel quarantine, including the alleged bonking. If this is true, we don't know how this night duty manager contracted the virus, whether that was a return traveller.
Could have been a frozen chicken.
Yeah, therefore he wasn't patient zero. But this is the thing. But the genomic sequencing, I'll use that again. The Chief Health Officer, Dr. Brett Sutton, has said genomic sequencing traces it all back to the hotel quarantine breaches. So it did come from there. Exactly how the breaches occurred, that's still, we're only getting leaks to the media.
Yep. And in our cases, it's sort of a case of the reports and investigations being pushed forward to after the election. You know, they're all due end of September when anything like this happens. But obviously you've got your local elections there are still a while away, aren't they? So,
well, we've got the first post-COVID state and territory election coming up on August 22. Northern Territory goes to the polls. The Labor Chief Minister, Michael Gunner, he was on the nose because the territory was nearly broke because of a bloated public service. But because he's kept community transmission out of the NT by closing the borders, that's his re-election strategy. If the country Liberal Party were in power, they would have opened up the borders and let the virus in. And then we've got the Queensland state election coming up October 31st as well, where the Queensland border has been sealed shut again by the Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk. We did see today, because Daniel Andrews, he has his daily press conference where he's asked about the failures in his government. I've mentioned that the biggest tragedy of this second wave is that the virus has got into the aged care facilities, that has contributed to probably nearly the majority of the deaths in this second wave.
And certainly in New Zealand's first wave, half the deaths were from one unit in a dementia ward. So that was, for instance, just one mistake like that. And actually, we had one of the travellers of our new patients, the first four patients. They actually travelled to Rotorua, and actually two of the new infections that we had were in Tokoroa. So there's actually two cases outside of Auckland, which I didn't mention. But they supposedly are all low risk in that area. They're not increasing the lockdown level in the Waikato. But one of the places they stopped was an old people's home, a retirement village in Morrinsville, I believe. And that place is obviously entirely locked down. They tested everybody, and that's where the greatest danger would be, people visiting retirement villages.
The other cliche about the coronavirus is it's a wildly infectious virus, which if it has, as that age report said, just come from one night manager, then that is quite alarming. And as we've seen with the Mystery Auckland cluster, it spread pretty quickly.
Exactly. And so we're expecting a lot more in the next few days. That's really the only way to put it. They're playing it down. That's at least what that's the impression you're getting from, you know, the people on the ground, the people who've got a little bit more information. And as they feed through the cases after the press conference, often the extra details they're feeding through about specific patients raise a lot of questions as well around, you know, how bad this is going to go. Now, a lot of people were talking, you know, they had a doctor next door to the business where this all started. Get sick. Well, okay. Well, how did the doctor get through it? He gets sick because the people there weren't his patients. So you know, it clearly, as we said, you know, incredibly infectious, but for the most part, harmless for healthy people under the age of 65 with no pre-existing conditions. Mostly, no problem. You know, essentially, you know, your risk is you know, like being struck by lightning. So.
Although we did have in Victoria, as announced today, a man in his 20s died from the coronavirus. Of course, for privacy reasons, they don't say if he had any pre-existing conditions, but it's overwhelmingly those in their 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, even 100s.
Yeah, yeah. And so this is why in most of the world, they've opted for the, you know, or involuntarily, no matter what, it's clear the you know, it's a respiratory illness that will run its course. It will run its course. And New Zealand is one of the few countries that could stop it, and Australia too. But even then, it's you know, like we said, we're in round two. If we're still committing to stopping it, we could be in round three and round four and round five, and we could be isolated for the rest of the world forever. But there's still no exit strategy. Except for, you know, bankruptcy and some kind of, you know, new hybrid of, people are making comparisons to fascism and to, Marxism and communism, you know, essentially an incredibly authoritarian system where your freedoms are taken away at a whim, right? One press conference and a couple of hours later, you're locked into your houses. That's the future that we're facing. You know, we're in an endless authoritarian nightmare because of the China virus, and you know, the CCP will could keep us at the threat of being locked in our homes, and there's no real way out, and it's unclear whether you know, people would even vote for anything separate. You know, we were talking about delaying the election before. People are saying, it's not fair that Jacinda gets to campaign this whole time. But at the same time, you're saying, well, people, then you're saying, you know, sort of people aren't smart enough to see through that. Well, maybe there's your problem. Maybe there's the problem. And so people are still happy with what they're getting. It clearly just has to go on, right? There's no real way out of it. Obviously, getting the people to realize that, you know, there is no end game here, and that's going to happen slowly over time. And so supporting that, bringing all the information to light, encouraging people to speak up and to not be afraid of speaking up, that's important. You know, giving people the right information to say, hey, this can't go on forever. At some point we have to let go, or we have to think about, are we going to be isolated forever? And people still clinging to the vaccine lie, basically. Oh, that's fine. There'll be a vaccine in 6 months, right? That's never been done before. They're still saying, oh, you know, we're close. They've been saying that we're close since March.
But apparently we're very closer now.
Yeah, very, very closer now is what they say. But, you know, that's, you know, good luck with that. But that's, you know, as long as they can cling to that, people will not sway from their belief that we have to simply suppress at all costs. So people will continue to embrace authoritarianism until either we get a vaccine, or, you know, and then they can force enough people to take it, or convince enough people to take it. Likely is the route they will go. I don't think forcing people to take it will go anywhere, and they will drop compliance rates through the floor. But that's it, and people are not going to, in large enough numbers, really change their mind. Hence, back to delaying the election. We'll see. Someone in the comments has pointed out Russia has the vaccine. I don't I didn't know. They say they had the vaccine. I remember the Israelis have been saying they had a vaccine. Oh, we got the vaccine. We're 2 weeks away from the vaccine back in March. I mean, where's the Israeli vaccine? You know, it's nowhere. And why would we expect anything different from the Russian vaccine?
It hasn't gone through stage three clinical trials where they have to test thousands of people. Test the vaccine on thousands of people. And the only other approach to a vaccine is herd immunity, which Sweden...
And everyone else is going to get there except for us.
Well, Sweden reached it through a deliberate strategy. New York and Italy reached it through government negligence, which is... Yeah. I'm hoping that Victoria reaches herd immunity.
Basically, yeah.
Because we still have 7,877 active cases. It's sort of plateaued around there for a couple of days now, because the recoveries are now starting to equal the amount of new infections as well. But going back to the aged care breaches, in Australia's health system, aged care is the responsibility of the federal government. And so it's their job to basically regulate and put through how the laws that how aged care facilities are to operate. And just coincidentally this week, the Federal Aged Care Royal Commission has been conducting hearings where it's been alleged by the council assisting that the federal government had no COVID safe plan for aged care facilities. And so Scott Morrison had a press conference today where he said he was deeply sorry for pandemic failures. This was his press conference this afternoon. He claimed that the notion that there was no plan, he said that's not a Royal Commission finding. But he said he was deeply sorry about mistakes made during the coronavirus pandemic on days that the system falls short and the days expectations not met. I'm deeply sorry about that. And of course I am. And I know that everyone who is involved in the process who is trying to meet those expectations is equally sorry. Which is, and of course, in this situation where people have died, sorry really doesn't cut it.
No, that's right. But it's difficult to say, you know, did anybody make the right decision in terms of New York sent their, was it de Blasio sent, you know...
Cuomo.
Cuomo is the one, that's right. And de Blasio is the governor. And Cuomo, the mayor.
De Blasio is the mayor, Cuomo is the governor.
Ah, is that way around? Which one? It's not that long ago, but I remember one of them sent people back into the aged care homes.
Yeah, that was Cuomo, yes.
And that was Cuomo, so that's okay. Yeah, so it was the governor. Sorry, the mayor. And I was going there all along. And yeah, he sent people back into... I tested positive for coronavirus, go home into these facilities. And so thousands of people died because of that. And the Swedish, chief health officer actually did apologize as well for basically not protecting aged care facilities, saying, you know, we didn't expect it to be this fast, this bad. We've never dealt with anything on, you know, like this before, and we failed to protect the elderly, you know. And once they got that under control, once they resolved that, their death rate has plummeted, right? We've already noted how both Australia and New Zealand saw, you know, high death rates due to aged care facilities. And so, the fix that these countries have is pretty similar. You protect the aged care facilities, you know, the virus burns out, you have very, very few casualties, and that's it. And yeah, how do you apologize? Just saying sorry probably doesn't cut it. Going a little bit beyond that to basically say, look, we weren't quite ready. And I think, you know, him saying, oh, we sort of, there was no plan. You got to go a little bit further than that and say the plan, you know, we didn't have a plan for a situation like this that was as bad as this. We just, you know, weren't ready.
We did have dropped today the findings of the inquiry into the Ruby Princess cruise ship catastrophe, as it's known. This was back in late March when those cruise ships were one of the biggest incubators of the coronavirus, and this Ruby Princess was allowed to dock in Sydney, and the passengers allowed to disembark without any testing. So the report was released today, where it called inexcusable and serious errors made. And it says here the New South Wales Health should have ensured that cruise ships were aware of the change in the definition of a suspect case. And you go down further here, the delay in obtaining test results for the swabs taken from the Ruby Princess of the morning of 19th of March, inexcusable. Those swabs should have been tested immediately. Going back up here, 101 persons fell within suspect's case definition of 18 a month, and 120 by the time the ship docked. New South Wales Police should have ensured that such persons were isolating cabins. These were serious mistakes of New South Wales Health. But nobody has lost their job over
nobody
this.
Nobody is held accountable.
The New South Wales Health Minister, Brad Hazzard, he still has his job, and he particularly lost it at the end of last week in the New South Wales Parliament, where he was asked by the opposition leader, Labor opposition leader Jodie McKay, is the reason that you're not making masks mandatory is because there's a shortage of them. And he got extremely triggered by that and said that, I wish you had a mask so you could be shut up. He just basically belittled and mocked her. It was really, he did apologize later, but you're not exactly the cleanest pair of hands.
No, and as we always know, government is your most incompetent, least capable entity, and you know, to put your trust in that is a guarantee for disappointment. To let them dictate how everything's going to, they are going to stuff it up, right? They did it in New Zealand. You had the world's largest boat, and they stuffed it up because it's the government. The government will always stuff up. That's the reality of it. And on that note, we've got about 15 minutes left or so. If anybody has any questions on anything, if you've got super chats, we'll guarantee we'll read them out. If you've got questions on any subject, just leave them in the chat while Tim goes through a couple more items, and we will just answer some of your questions on any topic if we can.
With the Ruby Princess disembarking, if I'll add to that for a moment, there was a blame game that broke out, whether it was the responsibility of New South Wales Health to check the health of the passengers or Australian Border Force, because obviously having border in the name, they're supposed to safeguard the nation from foreign threats, which the coronavirus is. Scott Morrison was asked today and said that there is no doctors in the Australian Border Force. That's not their job, which I'm surprised he wasn't challenged in this press conference to say maybe you should have a biosecurity division with some doctors. That would seem like a good idea.
Yeah.
Because that should be something that should come out of this if you're going to prevent...
Exactly. You need to be asking already, okay, what's going to happen next time? You know, even if it... And one of the issues that we had sort of was, the last time anything this big happened was over 100 years ago, when sort of the records on it were a bit rough, and we didn't have the technology that we have now. Actually putting permanent improvements and periodic reviews into place for, you know, because people, the government's always ready for the last disaster, and they always put the permanent bureaucracy in place that sticks around forever, you know, sort of like the 9/11 airport security theater stays in place forever. You know, you don't want a situation where you're going to be keeping the, pandemic security, health theater in place forever, for instance, like people wearing masks that have no idea what they're doing with them, which, you know, wearing a mask can help. Wearing a mask badly, though, can make the situation worse. And there's very little direct application. It's just a case of, everyone's going to go and do that. Everyone needs to do the same thing, and everyone needs to feel like they're somehow participating and show that they care. Without anybody actually sitting down, coming up with some concrete ideas that actually work for next time, and the same flimsy measures stay in place forever. And that's sadly basically inevitable. That's not the case. That's not the way it should be. And people do need to challenge them on that. And you know, the media, as we have talked about today, is you know, as useless, you know, useless as ever still, even though they're trying to pretend to be a little bit better now.
Because what's going to be the new normal of international travel? You have to isolate when you arrive in a foreign country for 14 days, or what's that, have a vaccination sticker on your passport if there is a vaccine.
And you got to shuffle barefoot through the airport to make sure you're not carrying any bombs. And then you got to have your mask and your isolation to make sure you don't have any viruses. It's going to, I have very little hope we get anything good out of it. But certainly people should be asking the questions and, you know, perhaps things can go better.
Have got a super chat in the Unshackled YouTube chat from Andrew McGuinness for $10 Australian. Thank you, Andrew. I know that he's become an increasingly regular participant in our chats and YouTube comments as well. In regards to the quarantine into government facilities in New Zealand, what happens if people who getting ongoing medical treatment test positive? Do these facilities have the ability to treat those people? So I guess that goes to, are these facilities already quarantine facilities already existing health facilities?
No, so the quarantine facilities are hotels, for lack of they are the hotels that have been sort of converted to be used for just for quarantine. So they've got a bit of security placed around them now. They've had cases of people escaping, similarly like you would have had in Melbourne. So when people are sick, they keep an eye on them. If they're sick where they need medical help, they get transferred to hospitals that have special isolation wards and special COVID-19 isolation wards that are separate to all the rest. So that's where they treat people. So they shift them from their hotels to the hospitals. And that does not seem to have really caused any troubles recently or at all. But we don't, again, they can't figure out where the cases are coming from. So who knows?
Western Australia is still coronavirus free for now. It's achieved elimination for now. But as we've seen with New Zealand, it's sort of delays the inevitable unless you stay closed forever, which is why the WA state government is throwing everything it can against Clive Palmer, the mining magnate who's launched a high court challenge against WA's state border, hard state border closure. Because it could be invalid under Section 92 of the Australian Constitution, and there is no time frame about when that border will remain unsealed. And he's basically become the number one enemy of the state of WA, and now it's intensified over the past few days because he also wants to sue the WA state government for $30 billion. This stems back to a mine that he didn't get approved in WA in 2012. So he's claiming damages there. So the WA Parliament has passed emergency anti-Clive laws to basically invalidate his lawsuit. And it basically, the legislation says, removes the principles of natural justice and due process with regard to this matter. So they basically tried to basically get rid of his lawsuit by making it illegal.
Yeah, that's a brilliant idea. That's the wonders of being in government. Absolutely.
And he's vowed to take this to the High Court for a breach of the separation of powers.
Yeah, and that's the only place he can go with that. Mm. I've got a question in my chat, just a regular one. What's the display in the background tonight from Dr. Foster? Good question. I like that one. I need to face the right way. The book that I'm reading at the moment, I'm actually reading Seeking Allah, Finding Jesus by Nabil Qureshi. And that's just the book that I'm reading at the moment. It's actually a very, very good book. I really would highly recommend it to anybody. It's a wonderful story about someone who's explores the great details of Islam and Christianity, and as you can tell from the book title, comes to a certain conclusion. And behind me on the other side is actually a little plant I picked up today. It's called a Wandering Jew plant. And I put it in the background because I picked it up today, actually. So something you can still do under New Zealand's level 3 lockdowns is buy stuff on Trade Me, and if somebody leaves it outside their door, you can go and pick it up. You can still click and collect from stores. So that was just a little something I picked up today. And you can, as long as we remain in level 3 lockdown, at least we have the ability to travel within Auckland and not leave, as long as we don't leave.
Because New Zealand's level 4 lockdown is you've still got it as your official alert level 4. It is more draconian than stage 4 that we've got in Melbourne. And obviously the difference is that in Melbourne we've still got our local KFC open for takeaway and other businesses as well. Bunnings hardware store is click and collect. So is Kmart. Contactless delivery is the terminology.
Yep, and that's what we've got as well. I can pick a question from your chat. I noticed as well from Daniel Walker. You said your teeth are shining white, very bright. What's your secret? Lots of fluoride in the toothpaste is the way to go. That's and the water. We have fluoride in the water as well, which helps a lot.
So some people would in this chat would say that's why you have certain views.
Oh, I'm sure they do. And I've just to follow up on my Wandering Jew plant. Apparently, the politically correct have insisted on renaming it the Wandering Do, or the Do, as the Americans would say, which we still say is Jew with a D. Saying it's an invasive weed. Yes, I know that's it is an invasive species, which is why it'll be staying inside. We'll be keeping it locked up inside the house and won't be letting it out.
Another development over the past 24 hours. I mentioned the Queensland state election on October 31st, and this was quite a disgraceful episode. The Palaszczuk government tried to pass. Basically censorship laws that would make it illegal for the media during an election campaign to report on allegations referred to the state's Crime and Corruption Commission under the threat of $6,672 fine or 6 months imprisonment. So therefore it would be illegal to report if any candidate is under a corruption allegation or investigation. And it has been withdrawn today after there was severe backlash. But that is pretty alarming stuff, that you could accidentally elect somebody who is under a cloud.
Yeah, that's quite I wonder why that one got dropped. Maybe some lobbying going on, politicians with the something to hide. Just maybe. And it fits in perfectly with this question I've got in my chat as well. Somebody asking what are the chances of a free and fair election in New Zealand? The likelihood of a free and fair election in New Zealand by Clark Key. And Clark Key is a regular here and also a regular super chatter. But this is just a normal question. It depends on how people are defining fair, especially. Obviously, Jacinda gets to hog the airwaves until September. So many people are not going to consider that to be fair. I would say New Zealand's likelihood of at least all of the votes being counted properly there is a high likelihood of that happening correctly. New Zealand doesn't have corruption in that sense. And I would find it extremely unlikely that we would have that
And you're supposed to have the two referendums as well.
As well, yeah. Obviously, I mean, I've got the leaflets here. They send around government propaganda, and that's, you know, about it. So, oh, this is our impartial information on it. But it is, you know, the impartial information is the government propaganda on the referenda. You know, you've obviously got your daily press briefing, which is also more government propaganda. So, yeah, it's never a fair game between the opposition and the incumbency. And it's a question of, you know, is the electorate capable of discerning the difference? Can you trust the people to vote properly? And that's always the wonderful question to ask in democracy. So, yes, people will be, I would say there's a high likelihood of people being able to vote fairly and freely, even though it's not likely to be a fair election in the case that everybody gets a fair chance, and it's not necessarily likely to be a free election in that we may still be locked down and not be enjoying our freedoms.
Is there because the big buzz or the promoted alternative election method is mail-in ballots.
That's right. So so you could do postal voting with the election. You know, not very many people are keen on that, and I think it would be a strange thing to push, especially with the controversies in the United States at the moment. Mm. Jacinda announced today saying, you know, the Electoral Commission has plans in place to hold an election under level two. So if Auckland can be dropped to level two by election day, then it seems like the intention is just to go ahead with it. So with social distancing, the election can be held. That's the idea.
Which is completely up in the air.
Obviously, campaigning can't be done, right? You can't go out and campaign. Mm.
Which is why you're back here on a Friday night.
Which is exactly why I'm on the show. Yeah.
And you'll be back again next week.
And I will be back again next week. And yeah, in terms of, and somebody in the chat is alluding to this as well, asking sort of how things are going with New Conservative. I think things are going pretty well in terms of the campaign. You know, the poll numbers were climbing slowly but steadily. A lot of enthusiasm, a lot of support out there. You know, huge numbers of supporters, people delivering leaflets. And the rest of the country is still in level two. So we've actually decided we are continuing campaigning outside of Auckland. So if you're not in Auckland, New Conservative will simply continue campaigning, even though many parties have suspended it. You know, the election likely is going ahead. But we will find it on Monday if there's any delays. But you may as well keep campaigning as if the election is going to happen. That's the way that I would approach it, and give it the best that you've got. Unless you're in Auckland, and then you're stuck, like me.
Well, we'll await the 2-day delay on a decision on the election. And this is the worst thing about being in heightened lockdowns, is basically your way of life depends on the daily press conferences of your leaders.
Yeah. And people's lives, people's planning is, you know, gets cancelled. People stop planning. And everyone just lives day by day in terms of, you know, okay, hopefully I can get my next meal. Go and, you know, people queuing up outside the KFC because, you know why, you know, the reason they're queuing up outside of KFC and you've got an hour long wait for KFC in Auckland the past couple of days is because, as far as people are concerned, they could be in level four, you know, midday the next day.
Yeah.
And then not be able to get the KFC anymore. And so everyone sort of acts like every meal is their last. And nobody plans for anything else, and that's, you know, that's really the saddest part, and the apprehension I saw from some people who were, you know, having to deal with the psychological impacts of having to go back into level four, which thankfully hasn't happened, but that would have been immense damage done to people. And it's already, you know, just going back to level three, level two, you know, these things are damaging to people in the long run psychologically.
Yes, definitely. Tomorrow is August 15th, which is the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II, with the surrender of Japan, the victory in the Pacific. Remember those veterans of World War II, they fought and died for the freedom that we enjoy today. Oh, sorry, wait.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, not if you live in Auckland or Melbourne.
Yes. Because Jacinta actually did confess today that freedom has been suspended.
That's right. So freedom is optional in the crazy world that we live in. Rather than people being able to decide, and take their responsibilities themselves, all these decisions have to be made for you today. And that's very, very different to the way things, were thought to be 75 years ago.
Yep, it's certainly worth reflecting that the victories for freedom aren't permanent.
Absolutely. And so don't stay quiet,
virtual free speech is what I'm saying.
Exactly. And as much as you can in the real world, exercise your real freedoms as well. I know there's going to be a protest in Auckland tomorrow midday, Aotea Square. I won't be there, actually. I've got my family. I'm going to be gardening. Got some chances to do some more gardening and spend time with my family. And I don't really think there's much point to it, but a lot of people do, and I think it will be busy. And I've got to, there's a lot of, I think we'll talk about it next week, inevitably. So we'll talk about this next Friday. And there's a lot of other questions I see in the chat, in both chats, that I didn't get through. We'll do question time again next show. I think it's actually a really good thing, good fun thing to do. Let you ask your questions for 15 minutes at the end of every show. And we'll make sure that we work that in permanently as an improvement to the show. And do keep giving us your feedback. Do give us, send us, throughout the week, other topics for discussion if you'd like us to discuss them. I know a few people do that. And we don't always get around to everything, but we appreciate everybody's comments and everybody's feedback. And we do try to take it to heart and try to improve the show because the show's for the audience.
Yeah, and I noticed that the audience that picked up towards right at the end, YouTube decided to play its usual trick tonight, where it was a slow audience start, but then picked up at the end. So thank you so much for everyone for joining us regularly. Thank you to Margot again for moderating. And yes, we'll be back next week, which we don't know what will be the state of our cities during this time. This is the thing about the uncertainty of this time, and it's not even one day at a time now, as you saw in New Zealand. It's half a day at a time.
Exactly. Yep. One last reminder here in the chat. Thank you, Clarky. Christchurch March for Life tomorrow. So the March for Life in Christchurch is going ahead. They're officially limited to 100 people, but they can break up into multiple groups of 100 people. And so go along to that if you're in Christchurch. And other than that, we will see you next week, and stay safe and stay free.
Yep. Have a good weekend, everybody. Well, the best that you can in the circumstance. Take it easy, everyone.